Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 78 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. It's great to have you all here, and if it's your first time, welcome. You can find all 78 episodes of this, the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. So go back and fill your boots, and if you have a spare 30 seconds, please rate and review this podcast to help us be more discoverable to listeners like yourselves who may not have heard about us yet. And now for this week's weather-delayed podcast. I do have to apologize for the late posting of this episode last week. The previous week, I was in the States at the Beaufort Film Festival. And last week, well, we landed in snow. Many of you may have noticed that, well, if you do live in the UK, we had a couple inches of snow, which brings the country to a standstill. So I couldn't make the journey to record my three guests until last night. Tyrone Huntley and Georgie Henley are currently on stage at the Southwark Playhouse in Phil Ridley's Angry. Not so much a play as a theater piece, with Huntley and Henley performing what Ridley describes as vespers, or standalone monologues. Now, this is a powerful piece with even more powerful performances. There were laughs, gasps, cheers, and tears on the two occasions I watched the show. Director Max Lindsay deftly makes his London directing debut, getting not only one performance out of his actors, but two. You see, Huntley and Henley swap these non-gender-specific roles on alternate nights, making a return visit to see Angry a must. And what's even more impressive here is that there are two on-stage debuts to witness. Olivier Award nominee Tyrone Huntley makes his straight play debut with many of us having seen him belting out numbers center stage in Jesus Christ Superstar at Regent's Park Open Air Theater for the last couple years, and also Dreamgirls at the Savoy. That's just to name a couple. And Georgie Henley is making her full theater debut here, having appeared on our screens as Lucy in the Narnia series films. So it's just impressive what these two have managed to pull off. And I sat down with Huntley, Henley, and director Max Lindsay to talk all things Angry. And I was also joined in the interview by Curtain Call team member Emily O'Shea. Just in case you're wondering if my voice drastically changed while asking a particular question, have a listen.
Hi, I'm Tyrone, and I play him in Angry.
Hi, I'm Max, and I'm the director of Angry.
Hi, I'm Georgie, and I play her in Angry.
Excellent. Okay, I'd like to get... Let's just take back to the start. If you mind, I'll start with Mr. Lindsay. Just because it's... I haven't seen a show like this. You know, we go see a lot of shows, but this is pretty unique. I was here last week when you had a Q&A afterwards, and yeah. I think it came out like there was something... like Philip had written 100 of these monologues that you kind of picked from. How did you whittle those down, or how did you kind of pick? Did you have to pick, or was it something that Philip did
Because I know you've been working on it for a couple of years, Max.
Whittle, I love the word.
Whittle, it's a good word. Whittle, yeah. So it actually initially started off with the final monologue, Air.
Okay.
So Phil wrote that when I did a version of his play Feathers in the Snow. I did at the Nuffield in Southampton, and he kind of wrote that as like a little ancillary project for one of the actors down there to do as kind of another evening of work, and it kind of stuck in the back of my head, and I was kind of sat there going, I really want to do something more with this. There's more that there's a bigger life that it has, and then it was only about a 20 minute monologue. And so I came back to Phil and just said, look, I think there's something more we can do with this one. And he agreed. And then we started talking about, he started to mention these Vespers, as he calls them, these monologues that he's been writing since he was at Central St. Martin's and doing kind of performance art with them. And so we just started kind of, he started sending stuff over and we'd meet up and we'd work on it with actors and we'd read stuff and we'd see what worked. And this kind of title of Angry started to appear because we constantly kind of talk about things that were just pissing us off in the world. And these kind of fell into place as things that, were kind of felt like they fit under this banner title of Angry.
Yeah. And I mean, they do work together. I think it's quite a fun journey. I didn't know how long the monologues were, or how long each one would take, or I just, you know, the story. They are varied lengths, so you never know. This play, this group of monologues, makes you definitely lean in. And congratulations on the performances, guys, because you definitely
Thank you.
From the off. I'm not going to spoil it because this is coming out. We'll do this tomorrow. So, you know, come and see it. You have three days
left
to come and see it.
Get yourself
but
to see
from
it.
The beginning, you're leaning in from the first monologue. It's quite funny how you guys, you can't see this, but you guys have split. Him and her are on opposite sides of the director. I don't know if you guys did that subconsciously.
I'm separating them apart.
Let's do that. Let's take you to that first day of rehearsal. I mean, was there a lot of table work? Did you come in? And what was that first day like, guys? Because it is unconventional as a play, as it were.
Yeah, so on the first day we came in and the whole team was there. All the creatives, director Philip was there as well, and the producer, and we did two read-throughs of the play, just sat around a table reading each version of the play. So the first one I started and the second one Georgie started, or vice versa. And yeah, it was just a discussion about the themes and the characters involved, and we just had a talk about the piece as a whole. And then the next day, it was me and Georgie with Max, and that's when we started sort of character work and started deciding where we were going to go with each monologue.
I turned up late on the first day. I was so
standard.
I mean,
it's just actors.
Yeah, I was so nervous about meeting Phil because I knew that Phil was going to be there. Obviously, like meeting the rest of the crew and things, but like, I was so nervous about meeting Phil that I basically got off at the wrong tube stop, and then then I kind of emerged into the, like, out of the tube. And then instead of thinking, oh, I should just go back down into the tube and get on the tube again, I just thought, oh, I'll walk, it's okay. And then, like, 20 minutes later, I was like, why did I do this? And I just kind of, like, emerged into the rehearsal room as this, like, sweaty lump, like, apologising, which kind of put me on the back foot a bit, but...
I'm sure it was fine. Did you have a coffee in your hand, Georgie?
I didn't. No, I didn't. I don't drink
that
coffee.
That was the saving
would
grace.
Been the best stereotype ever. So sorry, guys. I did stop along the way for a little beverage-ini, but I am late.
So what people may not know is that you guys, you just mentioned, Tyrone, that you guys, it, both versions, there are two versions of this play. You switch.
Yeah.
Is it alternate?
So there are six monologues in the piece. Philip Ridley doesn't really like calling it a play.
Yeah,
it's not really a play.
It's not really.
It's a Aristotle selection of these Vespers. And so there are six monologues, and every night we alternate which ones we do. So on Monday night, Georgie starts,
I start,
and then on Tuesday afternoon, I start, and then
Right.
It rolls on for the rest of the shows every week, so yeah.
And then on Tuesdays and Saturdays, we've been doing two show days, so we actually end up doing both versions in one day, and it's kind of like doing a one-man or one-woman show, mm-hmm. but spread over two performances,
yeah.
Which has been insane, really.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And it's incredibly different because obviously we're on our own, and... Mm. You know, me and Georgie share a dressing room and we're quite close, but as soon as the show starts,
we don't see each other
for the rest of the show. So, you know, in other shows that I've been in, you can always sort of check in with the rest of the cast as it's going on and sort of that kind of thing, and, you know, talk about how the audience is and all that kind of stuff, but you're literally on your own as soon as it starts. So
I think that's why whenever we come off stage, we almost metaphorically fall into each other's arms and we'll just have this like huge debrief about the show and we'll just be like, oh my god, did this happen? And, oh my god, yeah, I kind of heard that happened. And I heard you, blah, blah, blah. It's funny.
Yeah, I did True West at Sheffield, where John Light and Nigel Harman switched roles in that. So it was completely different, like what you were saying.
Yeah.
I could see the way that my performance completely changed because of the way they were. John Light was much more physical. You know, Nigel, you're a softy. I love you, but you're a softy. You know, and you know, I think what you just talked about, not having that to kind of play over, and you guys come in cold for each part of the piece, you know.
But I do think it's interesting that we don't have a cast who have to modulate that. So we have to modulate, and we modulate based off the audience. So we you know, temper our performances based on what kind of audience we have that night. But I do think, like you said, it's so interesting to think that you were in a production where the supporting cast would then have to entirely shift depending on, and I guess that would happen with something like the production of Frankenstein, Mary Stuart. And we don't have that, and I think that is in a way a blessing for other people.
Talking about Mary Stuart, Juliet Stevenson said the other day at the What's on Stage Awards when she won, she said that the audience is almost like another character in the piece.
Right.
They're the other half of the conversation, and that is no more true than in this piece, because we are constantly talking to the audience, and our performances are totally informed by the reactions and the you know, everything that the audience gives us. So
you can see whether those comic beats are landing more or whether the tragic beats are maybe resonating more. You can kind of tell, because you're literally staring at these people in the face, and like Tyrone has said previously, he's used to being on a huge stage, kind of removed from the audience, whereas here you're looking at them in the eye, and you really can see whether someone is affected by the romance stories, or someone is picking up on the more like the moments about family, or
and also we really kind of played with that as well. There are moments in it where it is very much about talking to an audience, but not just talking to an audience, like begging them for help, or asking questions of them.
I didn't know what to do. At the point, I was going, Do I say something?
And that's part of the magic of it, because you literally in certain particular ones of the monologues, you're seeing the audience wanting to answer, but not being quite sure if they're allowed to answer, or sort of going.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy.
We've had some of those guys.
Yeah.
And one drunk woman.
In that first monologue, angry, which is, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of pent up loss of control of rage. Tyrone's only had, you've only had it once, but Georgie's had a load of times where people have been shouting stuff back at her, and in a way kind of undermining, like trying to undermine.
In a way that feels like heckling almost.
Yes.
That kind of rotten tomato type thing. But I think it's so funny, because when I was at uni and we would look at, because I did an English degree, and when we would look at plays and study it from an academic perspective and deconstruct it, most of our conversations would inevitably end up with the fact that so much of writing a play ignores the audience, and so much of actual critical opinion, which is written about drama and the stage, ignores the audience. And a lot of academics are trying to reintroduce that into critical theory. And I think it's an amazing thing that Max and Phil have done, particularly Max, because obviously it is in the staging of the play, to revel in that feeling of the audience being uncomfortable and on the edge of something. And that was a really brave decision, and you smashed it.
Oh, thanks, babe. Thanks, babe. Just gonna see you brush that dirt off my shoulder.
So, Geordie, you've done a lot of film, and obviously loads when you were younger. Mm-hmm. What is it like sort of coming to the stage, and what sort of inspired you to come to the stage?
To be honest, it was this project. I try and look at things regardless of what format they're in. So I never really think, oh, I want to do a bit of TV, or oh, I want to do a bit of theatre or film. I always look at the project itself. And for me, I was so excited that Philip Ridley had written a new piece and that it was going to be a world premiere of that. I'm very surprised that I got the role, because I had no theatre experience, so it was amazing. But it did come with its challenges. Mm-hmm. There are lots of things that you learn, especially from doing film at such a young age. I am used to having a camera right in front of me, being radio mic'd constantly. Mm-hmm. So you can be as quiet as you want, as loud as you want, and that is that. You are used to having a very fixed amount of space that you can move in, and if you move more than that, then you're out of the light. Whereas on stage, you are utterly liberated in that sense. You can move in any way. You can contort your body however you want to. You have to project your voice. Mm. Your diction has to be exquisite, especially with something like this, because the audience need to hear every word of the story that you're telling. And those were all things that I struggled with, even when I first started performing to an audience. And now I'd like to think that I've improved and that I've gotten better. But yeah, it was definitely a huge leap. They are different skill sets, I think.
And on the flip side of that, Tyrone, mm-hmm. I've seen you in Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm. Apologies, didn't get to see Dreamgirls, don't hate me. I know, terrible. But it is the other side of that coin where, yeah. You know, having this big band behind you, and not that does anything to your thoughts,
yeah,
but you're used to holding that stage.
It's very different. Again, it's a very different skill set. You know, musical theatre has a rep for being sort of the easy version of stage acting. It's completely untrue.
What?
It's just so different. It holds its challenges.
But it's
space in itself. We're currently in the auditorium, as it were, but it's a black box with. Yeah. And we perform in the round, and the audience is so close and so intimate. Whereas on, you know, a West End stage, at the Savoy or at Regent's Park, there's just a sea of people that you can't, you know, pick out individuals. You can't see past really the first row. I mean, Regent's Park is different because it's daylight, yeah. So you know, you can see.
You see everybody, but you don't.
But exactly, but they're so far away. Yeah. That they're, you know, they're not there. They're not really there. And on a West End stage, you know, you just see the front row. Yeah. But here, it's, you know, you see everyone's reactions on such a minute scale. You can see them listening. You can see them, you know, willing your character on. And
does that freak you out at any points?
Every day.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Every day.
Especially, do you know what I found?
Oh, that's great. It's the right answer.
I think we were talking about this yesterday. Yeah. I don't think people realise how much their body language how much we detect of their body language. It's almost like osmosis. If you have someone on the front row and their arms are crossed, it's as simple as that. Their arms are crossed, or they're leaning back and they clearly are maybe just not that interested, but they're doing a bad job of hiding it. It can really put you off.
Yeah, or on the flip side, if they're really enjoying it, like that wide-eyed and, like, you know, their gasp, like, mouth open and all that kind of stuff, it's really sort of like, you can't help but, like, be attracted to that one person.
Oh, it's almost like a drug in that way. You're literally like, I want to feed you more information.
Yeah, but at the same time, you've also got to stay true to the direction of it, so you can't, our performances are informed by the audience, but there also is a skeleton of direction there that we have to stick to. So we have to sort of be disciplined in that respect as well.
Yeah.
But it's very, very different to performing.
One of the funny things, again, is that with like a big theatre, and also with film, because essentially you do have an audience watching you on film. Mm. You have the whole crew standing there.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to ignore all of them.
Yeah.
You're supposed to ignore this huge black contraption looking at you, which is this camera. You're supposed to ignore the fact that you have this huge kind of metal thing in your face, and even with like a theatre, you're not really supposed to acknowledge the audience in the same way.
And I think for me personally as well, in musicals, especially with Jesus Christ Superstar, everything was to time, everything was to music. You couldn't set your own pace, you just had to go with the band, whereas here you've got a lot more control over, you know, pace and you know, making sure that the audience really understands what's going on. And that control is a bit daunting, and it's a lot of pressure. So you're the only one, especially because it's just us on the stage.
But I can see how much that you two have settled into that. You know, kind of going away for like a period of time and then coming back and seeing it like, you know, a week later or something. The way that you have kind of settled into that kind of relationship with the audience. Is so much different from when we first put it up on those first previews, and the way that you are now kind of finding those moments of complicity with the audience is really, really beautiful to watch.
Oh, and there's moments where you feel like God, honestly. No, I mean that.
I'll tell you, that first piece really is like, I've never, I can honestly say, I don't think I've seen or been part of an audience where you've gone, I genuinely don't know. Is this where I say something?
Yeah,
how am I supposed to react?
And also, one of my favourite things in theatre is nervous laughter.
Yes,
I love nervous laughter as a reaction, because it's such a funny thing that we have as human beings. It's such a, even there are, you know, even reports of when people are told terrible, terrible, heartbreaking news and they start laughing because they can't actually deal with the trauma of it. So I do love it when, in that first piece in particular, you'll have a few people who kind of a weird chuckle. Because they don't know what else to do. They feel awkward.
I have to ask, has either one of you stolen anything from the other person in their performance? Have you gone, ooh, I'm having that?
Not consciously. but it was very, very strange, because we rehearsed separately after those first couple of days.
Okay. Entirely separately.
It was just one-on-one with Max. So we spent, you know, a week and a half completely not knowing what was happening with the other person. So when we got together, it was so crazy seeing the monologues in such a different way. And like, you know, I hadn't thought about it in that way. Or wow, you say it like that. I didn't really like that kind of stuff. And it was difficult towards the end of the rehearsal period, we were rehearsing together. Yeah. So sometimes you just have to sort of sit at the side and just not watch and not listen,
watch,
and sort of close your eyes,
because,
you know, by osmosis, you just, you know, get these attributes from the different characters.
And as actors, something that you're supposed to do is keep yourself open, keep yourself listening. So if you're, you know, really trying to be as vulnerable as possible, and you put that in the context of listening to someone else do the words that you're going to be speaking next, without even realising it, you know, you subconsciously take on things. I haven't stolen anything, but I've heard things that Tyrone's done and been like, well, I don't know why I don't do that. Like, that's much better than the way I do it, or
same,
something like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. But the thing is, that's what's great. You know, Max has been great in sort of letting us find our own characters and then leading us in a way that we don't steal from each other, or we don't take things from each other. He sort of just, like, you know, keeps us on the right path, or not the right path, but the path that we chose and are working towards.
And it did happen so organically, like the way that we came to talk about the characters, they did come from two entirely separate places. And so I think it would feel contrived in some way, especially if people came to see both versions, if we were stealing from each other.
It wouldn't feel natural, because the characters are very different.
Last one I'll ask, and because it's a technical thing, because we've talked about you not seeing each other, you come into each section of the piece cold. Not, I mean, you can hear the audience, you can hear what's being said, but it is a new piece. It's kind of like turn the page, and here's I am presenting a new character. This is a new person. You know, how do you prepare each time before you step on? Because the wings is what, you know, that's how we kind of take a moment. We get ready, we get to step on, and normally we get to play a through line, but this is not necessarily that. However, there is, for me, it's quite you know, fitting that Air is the last thing. Because I think, you know, the version I saw, Tyrone started, and you have this burst of energy, and the Air is kind of lit. Mm. And then at the end, you're fighting for it. And it, for me, that journey is pretty special. So, but you have to come into that cold.
Yeah.
So how do you, when you're sitting behind that door over there, kind of prepare to enter the space and go, right, this
is
it?
Question.
It's a great question. And it's sort of different depending on which monologue, because of mostly because of time. After, so if I've just done Angry, which is the first monologue, I only have a short amount of time to sort of A, get changed into my next costume,
yeah,
and sort of get my brain into the right frame of mind to do the next monologue, which,
yeah,
I'd be doing on that night, which is Bloodshot.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's about making sure that I at least know my first line.
If I know my first line, I can
go from there.
Yeah.
And sometimes, as an actor, you just blank.
Yes,
you
of course.
Just, it just doesn't
I've
come.
Been in auditions
so,
before,
yeah,
where I know the piece like,
yeah,
by the, like the back of my,
yeah,
hand, and then I've just been about to start, and I'm,
yeah,
like, wait, what's the first line? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So after I've got changed, I come round and I sort of hydrate, because for,
yes,
some of the longer monologues, you're,
yeah,
on, you're on stage for such a long amount of time without being able to, you know,
mm,
go off and do that kind of thing. So hydrate, and then I just go over the first few lines and just sort of get myself into the mind frame of that monologue that I'm going,
yeah,
into. I think it's a little bit more difficult when you haven't got time.
Yeah.
Going into Now, which is the penultimate,
mm,
monologue, the monologue preceding that is Dancing, which is,
yeah,
2 minutes long.
Yeah.
And so in that 2 minutes, you
especially
have to
when
get
I'm doing it,
you have to get changed, you have to run around to the entrance,
mm,
and it's just about trying to get that discipline just,
yeah,
in the seconds that you have before you come on, just reminding yourself that you know what you're doing, and then just go on and hope for the best, I guess.
For me, it's more important to have the time before you're about to come,
yeah,
in,
mm,
so I go straight off. And I don't take any time. I don't have water. I don't have anything.
Yeah.
I go straight into the costume change.
Mm-hmm.
I do it as quickly as possible, so I know that I have the time on the other side to have my water. And I don't go through the lines. What I'm really concerned with is keeping my mouth loose,
mm-hmm,
because the tension of getting changed and the stress,
mm-hmm,
of that,
mm-hmm,
means that I... can store,
yeah,
that tension in my jaw.
Sure.
So I'll always, there's a little mirror just by the where we're standing to come in, and I'll just be in the entrance doing the biggest, like stretching my mouth as wide as it can go, scrunching it up as small as it can go, trying to get that elasticity that I need. And then if I can, if I've got time, a couple of tongue twisters under my breath.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me, I hope that the lines come.
Yeah.
And for me, I and then there's a big kind of surge of music that separates,
yeah,
the monologue and sound. And I shouldn't say this because then the audience will look for it, but I always, just before I'm about to open the door, clear my throat and sniff.
Sage advice.
Exactly. Because I like have my water, clear my throat, and sniff, because I know that I will not be able to clear my throat or sniff for 45 minutes.
There's nothing worse than, especially Air, the final monologue, there's nothing worse than starting with like a frog in your throat, because you know you've got no time at all to do any clearing of any sort.
No.
And for me, the biggest thing is water,
yeah,
because when you're on a film set, the takes are never that long,
mm,
and you can pretty much go to the bathroom, you know, between a shot, blah blah blah. Whereas for this, if you have a little bit too much water because,
mm,
you don't need, because you need to hydrate enough for an incredibly demanding piece where you're going to be sweating and breathing in loads, breathing in dry theatre,
mm-hmm,
air.
Yeah.
And if you hydrate enough to last you through that 45 minutes, and then you get halfway through that 45 minutes and you think, I need to pee. It's not going to be fun. And then you'll end up like Joey Tribbiani when he hugs Jeff. And that's not going to be good.
Oh,
so, yeah.
That's,
yeah,
brilliant.
So dealing with water rations.
Yeah.
Tyrone, Max, Georgie, thank you so much.
Thank
that was
you.
An
thank
absolutely
you.
Brilliant conversation, and I hope everyone gets loads out of there, because I certainly did.
Thank
you. And it's on till Saturday's last performance, down at Southwark Playhouse in the Little. this, it feels bigger. It's weird. I've seen, yeah. I've seen things in here before, but this feels quite big. It's quite a nice.
So it's four performances because we have two on Saturday.
Yes.
So yeah, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday.
I think they can still get tickets tonight. Even well, actually, it doesn't matter. Your guy's going out tomorrow. Ignore that. Edit that out, please.
If you get a chance, if you get a chance, come and see it, guys. Come and see it.
Georgie Henley, Tyrone Huntley, and Max Lindsay there, actors and director of Phil Ridley's Angry, which is currently playing at the Southwark Playhouse until this Saturday, the 10th of March. Now, before we wrap up here, if you're a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. Just don't use passwords or a string of ones. Make it interesting, cool, but memorable. Start putting in your theater credits, and our database team will verify and make sure that your credits start linking to others on our site. You can also list your TV, film, commercial, voiceover, corporate. You know, if you've got a credit, put it up there. And it's all free. You can follow us on the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call. And I would really love to hear from you if you have any suggestions for this podcast or, you know, someone you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like me to cover. Just get in touch with me via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned above or previously, whatever. Or write to me personally at John with an H at curtaincallonline.com. That's J-O-H-N at curtaincallonline.com. And I have to extend a massive thank you to Tyrone Huntley, Georgie Henley, Max Lindsay, and the entire company of Angry. Congratulations on an incredibly moving piece, and have a great last few shows. And speaking of those last shows, if you want to catch this before Saturday the 10th, believe me, you want to catch this. Head over to the Southwark Playhouse website and get a ticket or two. You only have 4 days as this podcast drops, but do what you can and go. If you're a theater student, you will love this. This is a exercise in holding and commanding an audience. And if you're a theater fan or writing fan, there's plenty for you to sink your teeth into. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast. I will catch you all next week. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.